This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasothi. In our health and living segment, you know, we spoke about the gut microbiota and so much research being done, a lot of it being linked now to, Parkinson's, to irritable bowel syndrome, to our mental health. A whole load of issues now seem to be pointing to this second sort of gene pool or organisms that's happening in your gut and what we call your gut microbiota. But we also spoke about probiotics in that interview with Dr. Mahendra Raj on the 20th of April. He talks about probiotics, but he's not very committal. Well, the doctors are usually like that. But in the studio with me, Dr. T.E. Siong, he's president of the Nutrition Society of Malaysia. And we're going to be talking about probiotics, whether or not we're overselling it or are we overpromising when we actually sell. Welcome to the show, Dr. T. How are you today?
Thank you, Meera.
Why do you feel so strongly about probiotics, Dr. T? And I see the Nutrition Society of Malaysia has now come up with its own publication, which is titled Probiotics, a Friendly Gut Bacteria for Your Health. Obviously, you feel there is a big need to get people understanding about this.
Exactly, Meera. Actually, our intention goes back a little bit, if I may describe a little bit. We tend to neglect gut health. I believe many people are very concerned about heart health, your cholesterol level, BP level, glucose level, and so on. But many people neglect gut health. And gut health is gut microbiota, as Meera mentioned just now, very much linked to the diet. And one of the factors is probiotics. Not the only factor. Mm-hmm. Many other factors we can discuss as we go along, but one of it is probiotics. And why are we going apparently strong on this? It's already in the market. Many people hear about it, and we thought we want to give the right signs to the people. We cannot oversell. Probiotics cannot cure everything under the sun.
Yeah. So what
we need to tell the consumer what it can do, cannot do.
Cannot do. What are some of the misconceptions? What is it that Malaysians are not understanding about probiotics?
I think they are a bit hazy about probiotics. Some even mixed up with prebiotics. Mm-hmm. And they believe that probiotics can do so many things for them, even cure cancer, relieve cancer. But the science just not there for many of these. It can do certain things, but not many of these things. So, how to choose a probiotic? I think consumers are not aware of that. So they think that all cultured milk drinks have probiotics. So that is why NSM, Nutrition Society, have this program to inform the consumer how to choose probiotics, what are probiotics, what they can do, cannot do for your health.
Okay, so let's go back one step and talk about the role of good gut bacteria, and the need for probiotics in the first place. Why do you think that we seem to need probiotics at the moment?
I think we believe that there's quite a bit of a gut health problems. IBS and diarrhea, constipation is happening amongst people, and with unscheduled lifestyle, that's happening even more often now. If you look at hospital statistics, seems to be that number 7 or 6 of these hospitalization causes is due to gastro problems. So it is not like ranking 2 or 3, but it is a significant problem. So we thought there's a need for that. Yeah.
Why are we not maintaining good gut health? I mean, where are we going wrong?
I think, as I mentioned, people are very concerned about their heart, cholesterol level, BP level, sugar level, but somehow they neglect the gut. It's a large organ that people take for granted. Well, they know it's for digestion of food. Food goes in, digested. But beyond that, and when they have a chiribiri or diarrhea, then only they realize that gut is so important. Mm-hmm. I think people neglect it. Yeah.
Okay. And when you speak about gut microbiota, we're talking about the combination of good bacteria and not so good bacteria that exist in the gut, in the big intestine, as the large intestine, as well as to a certain extent the smaller intestine. And we've spoken a lot in the past with dietitians about the importance of the first 1,000 days of nutrition when it comes to a child, when the child is born. How does that play a role in gut microbiota? Because it starts to develop from the age of 3, I understand, your good gut bacteria.
Actually, it starts from day zero when a child is born through the birth canal. So when we compare cesarean birth and natural birth, the differences in microbiota has been shown to be there. So actually it starts there. Seeding of the microbiota starts from there during birth. And then after that, breastfeeding comes in. And there's a lot more in the breast milk than the formula milk. And they're already starting from day zero, breastfeeding up to 6 months. After that, then complementary feeding becomes very important. These are the dietary factors that nutritionists are very concerned that children, 6 months after 6 months, when breast milk alone is not enough, and they don't get adequate complementary feeding. Are there dietary fibers, for example, mm-hmm. play a very important role in the gut microbiota. After that, child's diet, 1 year old. So the 1,000 days, extremely important for many, many aspects. The window of opportunity to intervene and correct anything is within that 1,000 days.
So when we start to complement the diet of infants within the 1,000 days, what are some of the food that, you know, they should be exposed to and should be taking in for this healthy growth of gut microbiota?
So breast milk would be the
yep.
best choice.
But when you complement, I think the problem starts when we start introducing other food.
Correct.
Right? Yeah.
Correct.
So what are some of the food? Yeah.
From 6 months onwards, then a child's diet becomes very varied. We want him to be introduced to many types of food. And I think many parents are not taking enough paying attention to the complementary food after that 1 year of age. We tend to think that those older infants and young children are neglected in their dietary habits. So start introducing vegetables, for example, bean products, whole grain products. Those are very good sources of fiber. I really believe that Malaysians neglect fiber a lot. And fiber has a lot to do with microbiota beyond probiotics. Very fundamental is the varied diet and dietary fiber.
Well, the very fact that colorectal cancer is the number one cancer amongst males in Malaysia and number two amongst females in Malaysia, is that an indication of our gut health?
Absolutely, Mira, absolutely. And I think, again, it goes back to what I said about not enough dietary fiber. So transit time is too long. The unused food stays in the gut. Large intestine is too long. All these causes produces toxic substances and they cause a lot of havoc to the large intestine. And there we have it. Colon of the cancer becomes very important. Mm-hmm. So dietary fiber is extremely important.
Could you explain what you just mentioned about the transit time? What do you mean by transit time?
That means when a food goes in from the time it enters the mouth and it goes out as feces, then that there's a certain people must defecate once a day, we recommend. So if it stays in the large intestine too long, lack of fiber, for example, the stool doesn't move along. Lack of water, for example, the stool doesn't move along. That transit time becomes longer than usual, and that's bad for gut health.
What is probiotics? Can you explain to me?
Probiotics are supposed to be life, good bacteria, and the keyword is life, and when consumed in sufficient amounts regularly, they confer health benefits. This is the World Health Organization definition of probiotics.
When did we first realize about probiotics? I mean, how far back then did we realize that there was a need to introduce probiotics? You know, it entered the market relatively recently, and how did it become popular?
Yeah. Actually, probiotics, the first person scientist to discover probiotics is like 1906-07, that long ago. It was discovered that there are some bacteria which are good for the human body. And another French scientist found that if comparing between children who have diarrhea more often than children who do not have diarrhea, they found the differences in microbiota composition. So the first discovery was that time. But only in the 1960s, then a lot more work was done, and WHO actually convened a consultation to discuss about probiotics, what are they, how to define them, how to identify them, what may be known as probiotics and what may not be known as probiotics, and about 1960s. So it's not that recent, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure in our traditional diets, I mean, your grandparents, my grandparents,
yeah.
I know we were big on yogurt. I think the Indians, yeah, going back in time, were big on yogurt. Paneer, the cheese. But what, you know, there were some signs of introducing good bacteria in our diets. You want to just comment? I mean, I'm sure the Chinese do it as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's not that recent, but the coining of the word is more recent. So traditionally fermented foods have, but we may not call it probiotics if we go by WHO definition.
Okay.
But they are so strict. There must be a minimum number of 10 to the 6 live cells, live bacteria. There must be certain strains. So we may not call them probiotic, maybe because we don't do enough research on the local traditionally fermented foods. Mm-hmm. But there are certainly beneficial bacteria inside there. So our grandparents were right. Take fermented foods for your health and gut health, you know. So fermented foods like tairu and kimchi and all, they have good bacteria, but we hesitate to call them probiotic because we want to follow the law, the rules of WHO and Malaysian regulations. We may not call them probiotic, but they may be known as beneficial bacteria.
Okay. So we also have like tapai pulut.
Tapai, yes.
What else is there?
Some people also say tempeh, but yep. I think we hesitated to say tempeh. We did not include that because when we consume tempeh, usually fried.
Right.
Most of the bacteria would have been killed off.
Okay. So, all right. That's interesting. Okay. We'll come back and find out a little bit more about probiotics and the good bacteria that, you know, we tend to introduce in our diets, even traditionally. But, you know, if yogurt is indeed one sort of source of good bacteria, then if sometimes we put it in our cooking, then what Dr. T technically is saying is it's not going to be relevant anymore. We'll come back and have more of that discussion up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasodhi. We're speaking about probiotics today. Are we overpromising when we sell probiotics? What is the science behind the effectiveness of probiotic in developing good gut microbiota? It's just the combination of good bacteria and not so good bacteria, which coexist in our gut, in the large intestine as well as the small intestine. Dr. T. E. Siong is the president of the Nutrition Society of Malaysia, and we're trying to figure out, you know, what we refer to as probiotics today, and you know how to consume it if you do need it. When do you need it? All those sort of questions. We spoke about traditional fermented food, technically, if you cook it under high heat, what you're saying is it's no longer serving as a probiotic.
Yeah.
So now then we have commercially produced probiotics, whether it's in terms of food or beverages or even supplements. I mean, for me, Dr. T, if what you say is true and if it goes through any form of heating process, it's probably not probiotics.
By WHO definition and by the Malaysian Food Regulation definition, we may not call them probiotics, yes. They must be live organism so that they can enter the body and function there.
Okay. So the WHO definition, do you think it works to our advantage or does it work to our disadvantage?
I think it's good to have that clear definition. There must be live microorganisms. Mm-hmm. Well, research has shown that there must be live, literally say maybe kicking, to be beneficial in the body. And so that has been recognized by WHO even 30, 40 years ago. Malaysian Food Regulation adopted that. Malaysian Pharmaceutical Division Supplements Regulation have also adopted that definition. And world authorities adopted that live microorganism is required to be termed as probiotics.
We also have something called kefir now, which is hitting the market, something like a yogurt-type strain. Which probiotic strains have been proven to be beneficial for health?
The most two common ones are the lactobacillus genus and the bifidobacterium genus. And most common ones, most studied, I suppose. And if we go back to the Malaysian Food Regulation, which the society used that to guide us in identifying probiotic foods, these two are the only ones listed in there. And the regulation states that you cannot call other strains as probiotics unless this 23 or so listed there.
Okay.
It's that specific. And it's go down to the strain level, not just genus Lactobacillus or Lactobacillus casei, the species. It must go down to the strain level in order to be beneficial to health and recognized as of beneficial to health. So these two are the most common genera of probiotics. There are others. You know.
So my question is, why can't I just have some yogurt every day? Isn't that enough?
You could, but many of the yogurt, the way I understand it, do not have enough of live microorganisms to be called probiotics. They don't label them there because they do not meet the MOH criteria. There are probably live bacteria there, very probably so. It's fermented, cultured milk.
But not the 23?
But not the 23, okay. Listed in the MOH, yes.
All right, yes. So that is important before you call it a probiotic. Do we all need a probiotic, Dr. T?
We need good bacteria in our gut. We do not necessarily have to have probiotic, but we need dietary fiber. Some of this fiber serves as a bulk. It cannot be digested. It serves as a bulk, helps us along with the transit time. Some of these dietary fibers serve as prebiotics.
And what is that?
Prebiotics are so-called food for the probiotics. They are not digested. They go in the gut, and they serve as food for the multiplication of the good bacteria. So actually, if it's good, we have both probiotics and prebiotics. And dietary fiber, some only recognize as prebiotics. So probiotics does help. Probiotics, if we want to look at it that way, is one more direct way of getting the good bacteria. Whereas dietary fiber promotes the good bacteria that get the gut health going.
Right.
And prebiotics does serve that specific function. Probiotics give you the good bacteria directly.
Where do we find naturally occurring prebiotics?
Raw banana, asparagus, but the amount is so small. So what commercial companies do is they extract from chicory root, for example, and now it's commercially available, added to beverages, added to some foods, biscuits, and so on. And these, they are labeled as prebiotics, and is recognized by Ministry of Health regulations to have the term prebiotics because they submit scientific substantiation to show that. Ministry of Health does take care of these claims. So not every company can just claim prebiotic, probiotics, and can do this and do that.
Sure. So what do we look out for on labels? How do we choose a prebiotic or a probiotic? Yeah. What are some of the important things we should be looking out for?
So that our program was trying to tell people that when we want to look for a probiotic, look at the label. If it doesn't say probiotics, and probably the company does not dare to say probiotics, meaning that there's not enough live culture. The second thing to look for, number of bacteria must be stated. And that number must not be less than 10 to the power of 6, 1 million. And the storage condition must be there. So these are the various things we want to tell consumers to look out for. The word probiotic, number of microorganisms, the name of the strain must be given there, and the number must not be less than 10 to the power of 6. For prebiotics, they should be also labeled similarly. And the Ministry of Health also allows claim for high-fiber foods, source of fiber foods. So companies who meet this criteria may claim their product is a source of fiber, is high in fiber. So we want to encourage consumers to look for these when you do prepackaged foods. Look out for this comes a label, labeling and identify how to choose probiotic, prebiotics, and even choose foods, mineral content, vitamin A content, energy content. So people are not reading the label so much.
No, we're not. It's too tedious. We don't understand it. We just take it for granted. I mean, if it says so, so be it, you know. But when you say storage conditions, for an example, and based on what you say, if these bacteria or microorganisms are very sensitive to heat, then storage conditions is extremely important.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how do we store? Do we assume that every probiotic needs to be refrigerated?
Yes. Yes.
Because only recently I bought one and I was told you don't need to.
Well, that means maybe not a probiotic product.
It is supposed to be.
Oh, well, look for the word probiotic. Next time you go around and check that brand again and see. Because if you look, they must be in the chill section in the supermarket. And cultured milk drink, yogurt. You know, it's in a chill section. And you come back, you must transport it. You cannot go around the city and come back. So that is why it must be live and they must be chilled. So after opening, the storage condition must be stated there. Actually, it should be consumed straight away.
It should be.
Yeah. So live is very important. And why do you need to chill it? Keep this bacteria alive and able to do the work. But yeah, so if you may ask about supplement, they are not chilled.
I was talking about a supplement. Yeah. I apologize. That's what I was talking about, a supplement, whom she says now that there's no need to keep it refrigerated anymore. Is there much basis for that?
Yes. So the supplements, they have technologies to encapsulate and keep the bacteria alive by freeze-drying it. So only it becomes alive when you put it in cold water and consume it, small amount of cold water. So in supplements are quite different. They have technology to encapsulate the bacteria and keep them alive within there. Like freeze-drying it, and then when it's time to come alive.
You can actually do that.
Yeah.
Okay. I see people popping pills, which are supposedly probiotics.
Can also.
Vegetable probiotics. I mean, does that really work?
I am not a great fan of supplements. So okay. Who as nutritionists will say, take nutrients from foods and probiotics from foods, you know. Yeah, but they do play a role. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, may not be so convenient to bring a yogurt all the time and keep it chilled.
Yes.
So this is where supplement plays a role.
Yep.
They do play a role.
What are the consequences of too much probiotics? Is there such a thing? Or, you know, I'm thinking even if you have too much, it's all right. It probably just adjusts the balance. Am I correct?
Yeah, you're probably correct.
So there's no such thing as consuming too much probiotics?
Yeah, it probably not. It's not a concern. If you take it from food, if you take it from a supplement, you probably can exceed the maximum amount. Yes. Mm-hmm. So just like other supplements, vitamins, minerals, taking from supplements, concentrated form, could run to the higher risk of having too much of that nutrient or that particular functional ingredient that we're interested in. Taking from fruit is highly unlikely that we can be taking five tubs of yogurt.
Absolutely.
It's like self-limiting kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yes, of course, it's definitely self-limiting. It's like drinking orange juice, the juice of five oranges. You can drink it at one go, but if you have to literally eat five oranges, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, self-limiting, as you say. Do you think there's a lot of misinformation and misleading marketing of probiotics out there?
We are concerned that some products may be perceived as containing live cultures and probiotics. And so we want to educate consumers to read the label, what I mentioned, look for the label, look for the strain, and make sure it is alive. So marketing sometimes get very easily overexcited and make various claims that may not be right. So the law is already there. Actually, the law is quite new, April 2018. And we asked the consumer to follow what the law stipulates, and so that responsible manufacturers should not mislead consumers that if they don't have a live culture, they cannot claim that it contains live culture. They cannot use the term probiotics.
You know, Dr. T, sometimes we have diarrhea, our children have diarrhea, or food poisoning for that matter. And then if you see the doctor, then they will say, okay, go on a course of probiotics, buy something off the shelf and consume it. That's where we're lost. That's when you're like, okay, which one do I go? There's so many brands, so many types. You're inundated with this and you really don't know where to start. I mean, what's your advice?
Before I answer that, actually for diarrhea-associated problems, probiotics will probably help. It's where the more signs there is there. So how to buy a probiotic? Actually, I don't have an exact answer for that. I suppose buy a trusted brand and one that you are used to it and it helps you. Yeah, so there are not that many brands in the market in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. There are many more brands in Europe, for example, where people are really more familiar. They accept probiotics more. And to Asian population, maybe less. In Malaysia, I think not many will call themselves probiotics in this country. They do not live up to that specifications of MOH.
Right. So it's quite stringent then to put the probiotics on your label. Not many people can actually do that. So once again, can we go through the microorganisms must be 10 to the power of 6. the storage conditions should be listed there. The microorganisms should be listed there.
Up to the strain level must be listed
and
there.
And according to MOH, there must be at least 23 strains, am I correct?
There are 22 strains, but I don't expect the consumer to recognize all the 22 or 23 strains. However, if you are in doubt, then you can always check with food quality division and see. I don't think a manufacturer wants to put one strain there which is not in that list. It can be very serious for that company. Yeah.
If I'm trying to understand this, the live bacteria, you ingest it and then what happens?
The live bacteria goes and, well, actually the exact mechanism in many conditions could be different. Well, it competes with the pathogenic organisms within the body, pathogenic bacteria, and competes for space within the microbiota space. In some other ways, the microbiota, the microorganism actually determines the digestion of different foods. And some bacteria can even digest fiber in some microorganisms. So fiber usually not digested, but bacteria can digest fiber and release small amount of energy, very small amounts, let's say half or a third of normal food. Let's say carbohydrate or protein. And it is also said that the good bacteria is very useful for immune properties. It serves as a protection in the gut and try to ward off foreign pathogens invading the body. So immune science on good bacteria is actually gaining a lot of momentum.
Okay, yeah. All right. Does consuming probiotics change your gut microbiota? And does it change it permanently or is it just transient? Meaning, if you don't consume it consistently, does that mean the combination of good bacteria sort of starts to go down?
Very good question. Very pertinent. Actually, it does not mean that we consume once a week or once every 2 weeks. It's going to be okay. We have to consume it daily. Our microbiota is influenced by our diet, our mood, and many other things in the environment. So if we take a lot of fatty foods, for example, not enough fiber, then the microbiota change a lot. So we need to consume actually probiotic foods every day. Yeah, I also recommend together with good source of fiber, good amounts of fiber. Yeah.
Okay, and for children, if we do decide on probiotics, supplements for children, is it different from the adults?
No, it is the same. Same cultured milk, same yogurt can be given to children. Yeah. Anything above 6 months of age, and there is no known problem giving to children. And same yogurt, same cultured milk can be given to the children.
Okay. Some studies now show that gut microbiota composition differs from those who are obese and those who are, you know, lean people. And, some research that they've done in mice shows that your microbiota can actually make a difference into whether you're lean or obese. How does it influence weight gain or weight loss? You know, who would have thought, right? Your microbiota combination of good bacteria is going to make a difference to how, you know, your weight, for an example.
That is a very exciting field of research.
Absolutely.
Probiotics, because obesity problem in this country is so huge. If that can really help, well, that will be maybe one of the solutions for Malaysia. I do not think that's going to...
It's not going to be that easy.
No, definitely not. That would have solved the problem.
And it will also help with colorectal cancer if we get that
right.
Yeah, we can solve
that. Yeah. So what's happening? There's not enough science to say how that happens, actually. And we do not recommend taking probiotics to lose weight. We cannot say that yet. I suppose it's because the probiotics help in the selective digestion of food, and so that maybe they don't digest so much of the fatty foods, and less selective digestion and release of energy could be one of the reasons why the lean people have more good bacteria. But I'm speculating. I don't know, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Does having this combination of good bacteria, you said it helps with the digestion of food, right? So does it help break down everything that we're eating?
We hope to break down everything that we eat.
It has to be
the digestive system. Yeah, the digestive system. But the bacteria break down only the dietary fiber, for example. So enzymes start breaking down food from the time we swallow gastric juice and then and small intestine and so on. We release energy, the vitamins and mineral, absorb what we need. The rest go down to the large intestine, and it should be expelled periodically. And there, in the large intestine, where most of the microbiota is, it could break down some fiber. And it actually is another interesting thing. It produces some vitamins. Vitamin is something that our body cannot produce. That's why we need to take every day from the food. But interestingly, it produces B12, vitamin K. Yeah. So that is important, for example, vegetarian. Could be useful.
What about the immune system? What's the impact of having a good microbiota, gut microbiota? How does that help with your immune system?
One of the better known ways is that it serves like a wall. For example, the Peyer's patch. These are very specialized immune cells within the GI tract, where it serves like a wall, blocking away other pathogenic organisms. That's one way. The other way is it appears to help in people who are prone to allergies. So families or children who are born with higher risk of allergies could benefit from probiotics. There's also other ways that it seems that the good microbiota can signal the other parts of the body. And this is where the research may not be so strong. There signals and help in immune system in other bodies, in other. Actually, the gut, there's also what is known as the gut-brain axis. The gut seems to tell the brain to do many things. So that is a lot of research going on. The gut-brain axis, and there it could be also signaling for immune reaction to various pathogens going to the body.
Irritable bowel syndrome, for an example, and how it has some links to stress. And, that could be, just me speculating this whole gut-brain axis and how, it affects Parkinson's, for an example, goes back to the gut-brain axis. So really interesting development. Any research that you're focusing on that you're excited about that's going to come out in the near future about probiotics?
Yeah, those areas like mood and anxiety, so on, a very new research, and I don't think anyone is coming any closer to finding out, does it help, does it not help? So in this country, we are doing a lot of work mostly on identifying microorganisms in our local foods. So local research is a bit weak in clinical studies, for example, and finding out how it can be helpful in constipation. There's more work in there, constipation, diarrhea. Local researchers are looking to that. And it has proven positively shorter transit time, less frequency of constipation. In other areas like lowering cholesterol, obesity-related problems, there's much less research going on. And I really hope that there could be more research on local strains of microorganisms. Instead of just relying on a lot of imported strains, we can encourage locals to consume more of the tairu, maybe, for example, or local yogurt.
Yes. And there's quite a bit of it out there already.
Yes.
Fruit yogurts and all of that, and everybody having that. So if we can go through very quickly with you, what should we be eating in terms of food with microorganisms which would contribute towards good gut bacteria and the fiber, where should we be getting it from?
To round up then, I have to say that go back to the basic principles of healthy eating, a balanced diet, a varied diet, and which is high in dietary fiber. It may sound so simple, but many Malaysians don't do it. Balance means having good amounts of balance, appropriate amounts of the different food groups. And people neglect. People tend to eat maybe a very high meat foods and neglect on fruits and vegetables, or take a lot of carbs but not enough of the fruits and vegetables, for example. So balance in that sense, variety also comes in very important. Don't just eat ikan kembung all the time or eat pear all the time. That's what we mean by variety. Different fruits have different nutrients, different food components. We're not just talking about nutrients nowadays. Other food components which are present in food, not yet identified, these are called phytonutrients and we need them. So variety is very important, balance very important, and for this gut health, dietary fiber is extremely important. I really believe that Malaysians ignore vegetables and fruits and whole grains and legume products. You know?
That's right. And what's your take on fruit juices and smoothies, for an example?
They can, as contributing to the intake of some fruits, but I would not say that we can take juices to replace the taking of fruits. And because, well, fruit juices has much more sugar. Even natural fruit juices, 100% juices, we cannot say that, oh, these are very good for health, just drink 5 glasses, 10 glasses. We do not recommend that. Take the fruit, the whole fruit, and nothing but the fruit. That's what we would encourage. Yeah? And get your teeth to work and enjoy the food, not just juices. They can be fun things, yes, we can indulge in them, but they cannot replace the fruits.
Yes, absolutely. Your message on probiotics, what would you like to leave us with?
I think we can use this as part of a daily diet and every day, and they do contribute towards promoting good gut health. And we don't expect miracles, but at least good gut health, we know, is extremely important and affects many of our daily lives.
Okay, so good to know probiotics, microorganisms exist in naturally, you know, the natural food that we actually eat, in terms of yogurt and tempeh, not really tempeh, but tapai and
tapai,
all of that.
Yeah.
Kimchi, you know, a lot of fermented stuff. All in moderation, don't you say, Dr.
Certainly,
T?
Certainly, certainly.
Yeah,
everything in moderation.
Everything in moderation. Keep those fibers going. And if you are buying a probiotic, you want to look out for labels. You want to look out for the minimum amount of microorganisms, which is 10 to the power of 6. Look at the storage conditions. Look at the strains that are in there, and the Ministry of Health definition of microorganisms are 23 at least on there. So look out for some of these when you go shopping next. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Dr.
T.E. Siong, President of the Nutrition Society of Malaysia, on probiotics on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.